This is the Angry GM, and I'm here with a proofread aloud of an article that has come out at the same time as this proofread aloud, so I no longer need to tell you when the article's going to come out. When are you listening to it? The article's out. That should be clear. Anyway, the article is entitled The Big Boneyard Beach Battle, colon, An Angry Table Tale, and it goes a little something like this. Today, I'm killing like seven rocks with one rock, and I misspelled one of the rocks because it's supposed to be Rock, the giant mythical bird, and Rock, the thing you throw at birds to kill them. So, today, I'm killing something like seven rocks with one rock. And thanks to that, I could call this feature basically anything, and it'd fit my mysterious feature classification system. Okay, that's a hell of an overstatement. It's like this. After my last table tale, literally everyone, or at least two of you, asked me about the mass battle at the sailors' camp. Meanwhile, literally everyone else, or at least two different other yous, asked me about the second half of the point I promised to make. And after I dropped a comment in my article about why Angry ain't worrying about D-Box 1 and you shouldn't either, literally everyone who hadn't already emailed me about the previous two things, are you sick of this running joke yet, asked me to explain. Turns out, I can handle all that shit in one article. One that's half how to GM, half bullshit, and all table tale. And unlike the last table tale, this time, I'm gonna start with the tale. Heading. The Big Boneyard Beach Battle. Pull up your chairs, kids. Let old Uncle Angry tell you a story. Or let him continue a story anyway, because he already told you the beginning. Once upon a time, some newbie adventurers, PCs all, boarded a ship bound for the part of the Angryverse where Angry keeps all his classical mythology shit, Old Zathynia. But on the way to the Zathynian town of Metrios, wannabe Poseidon, or someone, blew his volcanic stack for as yet unrevealed reasons. In the volcanic fallout, still a day from town, the PCs and the crew of the Aster were forced to abandon ship. They got stuck on a narrow stretch of beach surrounded by rocky bluffs. And, as if that volcanic explosion thing didn't suck bad enough, it turned out the beach was cursed as fuck. Whoops. I can't explain the curse because the players failed their knowledge checks to know literally any tiny... literally any tiny thing. Right, okay, I did get that right. I can't explain the curse because the players failed their knowledge checks to know literally any tiny thing about it. Thus, they have no idea if the curse is related to the volcanic thing or if it's just another example of the standard fantasy trope whereby literally every corner of the fantasy wilderness is cursed in one damned way or another and therefore constantly disgorges monsters on the unwary. They may never know. Neither may you. Sorry. So it's a dark night. The darkest night. Thick. I misspelled the word thick. I wrote fitch. So it's a dark night. Why didn't Grammarly catch that one? Nice job, Grammarly. So it's a dark... never mind. I was just going to go into a whole other rant about Oxford commas and, you know, subject-verb agreements. But, yeah. Anyway, so it's a dark night. The darkest night. Thick, volcanic clouds blot out the sky and ash drifts through the air. The parties manage to secure a camp in the middle of the beach. It's not a bad camp, really. The sailors salvaged supplies from the ship as it sank, and big boulders make it reasonably defensible. It looks like this, and I have posted the map of the camp. Once everyone's settled, and keep in mind, the party doesn't know they're basically camping in the backyard sandbox of the poltergeist house here. Once everyone's settled, the party grabbed some torches to scout the perimeter, and to check something out. Because earlier, through the clever use of light spells and a wizard's familiar, the party spotted a bunch of things that looked like grave markers a couple hundred yards from the campsite. They wanted to check them out, make sure they're not the sort of things that disgorge monsters to attack unwary campers. The things that looked like grave markers? They're swords. Ancient, rusted, rotten, useless swords. And spears. Well, spear points. All driven point down into the beach. Dozens upon dozens. That should be spearheads. spearheads. I kept trying to remember the word spearheads, and I kept coming up with points, tips, yada, yada, yada. Spearheads. The things that looked like grave markers, they're swords. Ancient, rusted, rotten, useless swords. And spears. Well, spearheads. All driven point down into the beach. Dozens upon dozens. The party racked their collective brains and made some abysmal knowledge skill checks and determined absolutely effing nothing. Well, not nothing. The wizard was able to detect a disturbing flow of necromantic magical energy spreading across the beach from the swords as the evil red moon was getting set to rise. The party couldn't see the evil red moon, but angryverse wizards can feel the red moon because it fucks with magical fields the way sunspots fuck with cell phone reception. And that's just another crazy thing about the angryverse. Anyway, the party figured something was about to happen, and they decided they wanted to see it when it did, because it involved necromantic magic and a moon that I have repeatedly described as evil and red. Naturally, the party decided Ground Zero was the best place to be when whatever was going to happen happened. Minutes ticked by, the evil red moon, her name is Chrisma, by the way, evil red Chrisma rose unseen behind the impossibly thick clouds, and nothing happened. Then some skeletons wandered up behind the party and said, "Hey, what are you all looking at?" But they said it in skeletonese, so it just sounded like clackety-clack, clickety-clack. I'm just kidding. The skeletons effing attacked. They're skeletons. And because they're D&D 3.5 skeletons and I rolled 3 crits in 4 rounds, it was an effing nightmare. For the players, I was having a blast. I love undead in D&D 3.5. They're the worst shit to fight, not the easiest. That's how it should be. The party dispatched the skeletons and exhausted their meager healing abilities to get themselves back from dying to painfully limping, and then they trudged back to camp, cursing about the angry GM and his effing crits. When they got close to camp, they heard trouble. They couldn't see what was going on because only the dwarf could see beyond the party's torchlight, so they picked up the pace. The party wasn't the only one that had skeleton issues. The camp was under attack. And there began the big Boneyard Beach battle. The situation was like this. The party approached from the southwest. They saw, when they got close enough, a bunch of skellies fighting a bunch of sailors, several with injuries. The sailors were fighting with improvised bludgeons, which gave them a minor advantage over the party with their fancy swords and knives, but the sailors were also first-level commoners, so yeah. The players rolled initiative to join the fight already in progress. Yeah, I misspelled progress. Badly. And again, wondering why do I even do the Grammarly check before I do the proofread? The players rolled initiative to join the fight already in progress and spent their first round fast slogging through the beach sand to join the fight. Meanwhile, I kept the fight going between the skeletons and the sailors, rolling dice behind the screen, applying damage, describing results, that sort of shit. When the party got close enough, they could hear a second fight raging on the other side of the camp and out of sight. And as that fight raged, all in the same initiative order, I described what the party could hear happening from that direction. In other words, I had a fight going round by round, half hidden by fog of war and cover of volcanic nuclear night, between 3 PCs, an NPC scholar priest, 10 sailors, the ship's captain, the first mate, 6 unarmed skeletons, and 4 skeletons armed with ancient swords. Which is why I'm not going to give you a detailed blow-by-blow. I'll just hit the highlights. Due to some piss-poor die-rolling, the party stalled, clearing the southern front for a bit, but eventually they destroyed the last skeleton on the south side and dashed across the camp to join the northern skirmish. By the time they got there, a couple of sailors had gone down and the captain had joined the fight, raking his dagger uselessly down skeletal ribcages with comical cartoon xylophone noises. The party had to take some time to get into position while the skeletons and the sailors and the scholar and Gilligan and the skipper took turns dishing out damage, but eventually they cleared the rest of the skeletons and all fell calm. And that was the big Boneyard Beach battle. At least that's how it played out on the players' side of the screen. Later, during the post-session bullshit session, post-game bullshit session, because I shouldn't use the word session twice. Later, during the post-game bullshit session, one of my players said, "I gotta ask you, how did you actually manage that fight? Because I struggled to handle even one NPC helping the party, and you had 24 good guys and bad guys fighting on two different fronts." And like any good but egomaniacal magician who's torn between bragging about his brilliance and keeping his secrets, I asked with a mischievous smile and a twinkle in my eye, "Are you sure you want to know?" Heading, "Are you sure you want to know?" I'm about to reveal my deepest, darkest GMing secret, just like I did that night 2 weeks ago. And I know that for some of you, that secret's gonna ruin shit for you. It might ruin the games you play under other GMs you respect. It might ruin everything I've ever written. It might ruin me. It's a loaded question. Once, Penn Jillette was asked to explain how an old-timey duo of radio psychics pulled off an amazing trick. And he said he'd reveal it, but he also said that it wasn't gonna make anyone feel good. Because magic's always ugly. It's never elegant, it's never wonderful. The secret never makes you feel good. Because the secret's a hideous mishmash of magnets and misdirection, of tricked cards and trickery, of outright lies and Rube Goldberg nightmare contraptions that have no right to work as well as they do. What I'm about to tell you isn't just how I ran one big, complex fight. It's also how lots of great GMs do lots of things that you wish you could do. Maybe even how your GM does the shit he or she does. So it might ruin every game and it might ruin every GM and every game ever. So, are you sure you want to know? And if you don't, you should, cut out of the voice chat channel now. I ain't kidding. There's a lot at stake here. So, I'm giving the live listeners a moment to just decide whether they need to click disconnect right now. Okay. Heading. And also you listening to the recording? Shut it off right now because this could ruin everything. I am not shitting you. Okay. Heading. The big reveal. How did I manage the big Boneyard Beach battle? I didn't. I effing didn't. I made the whole thing up. I wasn't really running a mass battle, not at all. I ran the part nearest to the PCs, the parts that were directly that the PC. Bleh. I ran the parts nearest the PCs, the parts the PCs were directly involved with, and I made just enough die rolls and pulled just enough faces and made just enough noises in response to make it seem like I was running every moment of the fight. When a sailor took damage or a skeleton dodged an attack, I made that shit up. Oh no, Eight Toes is down. I effing killed Eight Toes, not the dice, me. Okay, that's an exaggeration because I didn't really make everything up. I just can't actually tell you what shit I did make up and what I didn't. It was more like this. "Oh, the party's been stuck at the Southern Skirmish for a while," I said. I'll roll some skeleton damage and apply it to Eight Toes. Or, I'll roll this sailor's attack and damage for real this time. Basically, in each round of combat, I made one or two real, actual die rolls, attacks, damage, whatever, and a handful of fake ones. And I rolled way fewer dice than I would have if I'd really been running things by the book. Beyond that, I was just moving minis on a map and telling a gripping story. Hell, that's still an exaggeration, because I did way more than that. It just had nothing to do with the sacred rules as written. Consider this. Last time, I told you I was grading the players based on the number of sailors they kept from getting dead. And I just admitted that I killed a sailor by gut feeling and fiat. Well, that's not the whole story. First, what actually happened was the two sailors got dropped in the fight. When the fight was over, they were bleeding out, which ain't a thing that NPCs normally get to do. But that gave the PCs a chance to help. They tried, one PC burned a spell, and one failed a heal check. So one sailor lived and Eight Toes died. Second, two sailors were precisely the right number of sailors to go down. Why? Because two things happened to put the sailors at risk, and both had to do with what the players actually did. Though both three sailors and one sailor would also have been precisely the right number of sailors to go down. Hopefully by the end of this feature you can wrap your noggin around that because I ain't explaining it further. First, the party went out scouting and left the sailors to defend the camp themselves. And when they discovered that evil magic was spreading across the beach, the players chose to stay where they were instead of heading back to the camp. If they had returned to the camp, they'd have been on hand for the start of the big Boneyard Beach battle instead of coming into the middle of it, from outside. Second, the party got held up. Partly because of their crappy die rolls and partly because of the tactics they used, or didn't use, it took the PCs a while to down the skeletons attacking the southern edge of the camp, and so they didn't get to the northern skirmish very quickly. Do not misunderstand me. I did not punish the players for their bad choices and unlucky die rolls. These days, everyone thinks punishment and consequence are synonyms. They ain't. If the party had fought the southern skirmish differently, they might have broken through faster. They didn't fight wrong, but the fight did take a lot of rounds. That is a thing that happened, and it left time for Eight Toes to die. Likewise, the party didn't make the wrong choice when they chose to scout or watch the magical nexus point for trouble. They figured shit was about to go down and that it might threaten the camp, and they decided to face it right there. It was a perfectly fine, perfectly valid guess that just happened to be the wrong guess for the situation. And the party had incomplete information, mainly because they can't roll dice for shit. It wasn't their fault that they weren't in the best place to protect the sailors, but fault doesn't matter. They still weren't there. I didn't punish shit. I didn't murder Eight Toes. I evaluated the players' actions and determined the consequences. That's my effing job. A job that's far more important than any rule in the book. And I did it way more fairly and even-handedly than a plastic random number generator would have. Heading: Do Rules Matter or Not? I started the last Table Tale by asserting that the game's mechanics matter, that they're important. And they do. They are. Now I'm saying I dropped those mechanics the moment they got inconvenient and made a bunch of shit up instead. And I did. I do, and I'd do it again, because it ain't my job to apply rules. The rules aren't my job, they're my tools, and I don't have to use them if I don't need them or don't want them. Come on, if I'd run the fight I described by the book, even with my amazing talent for keeping a fight flowing, it would have taken forever, and it would have been dull as shit. 90% of it had nothing to do. 90% of it had nothing to do with the PCs anyway. Until one of the heroes got to the north side of the camp, there was nothing they could do to affect that skirmish. Hell, the PCs had no way to affect the fight that happened before they got back to camp either. Do you think I'm gonna roll dozens of dice to resolve shit the players can't effing change? Hell no, I'm not. Professor Dungeoncraft, or whatever the hell his name is, did a great video about this shit vis-a-vis the D-Box 1 playtests. A video I wish I'd thought to do first, because he said nothing in that video I wouldn't myself say. I'm gonna embed it here. Watch it. And now you can watch a video after you're done listening to this. Most GMs, especially the ones who've been at this shit for a while, most GMs ignore 90% of the crap in the book. Which book? Any of them. Pick a system, pick a book. The best GMs ignore 90% of that shit. It's mostly useless crap. Does it really effing matter whether I carefully calculate the exact DC of a specific climb check to be 17, or I just wing it and say if it's 15? It does not. Hell, it wouldn't matter if I said it was 25. Consider that no one actually reads the rules anyway. Do you really think most people read all the rules? Did you? Don't lie. Have you actually read all the rules for the game you're running from cover to cover? Especially if it's the latest edition of a game you've already been running for years. That's why so many people didn't even realize that a natural 20 wasn't an automatic skill success and a crit to boot when D-Box 1 threatened to make it the raw. Truthfully, I've been secretly training you to ignore the rules for years by writing new rules for you. I shit you not. Consider those companion NPC rules I wrote. The ones for carefully statting NPC allies. Whoops, misspelled statting. Which isn't a word, by the way. Statting is not a word, which is a pain in the ass. But I know that if I wrote statting and it comes up as not misspelled, then I spelled it incorrectly because then I wrote stating. Consider those companion NPC rules I wrote. The ones for carefully statting NPC allies and writing quirks and loyalty powers and all that shit. Do you follow them? Maybe you did when I first wrote them. Maybe you built every companion NPC carefully. But there came a day, or there will, when you decided not to bother fully detailing a quirk. Or your players recruited an NPC you hadn't prepped in advance. So you scribbled some quick notes, or no notes at all, and said, I'll handle this however I have to. And then suddenly, you were just running NPC companions. The fact is that while it's nice to be able to build balanced stat blocks for NPCs, the loyalty and personality crap is something a GM can just, you know, do. It doesn't need tracking or mechanics. I know that shit happened because lots of you told me it did. I recently admitted in one of my supporter live chats that I expected most of you to get sick of writing detailed stat blocks for companion NPCs and just start playing companion NPCs right once you knew what playing companion NPCs right looked like. And in reply, I got lots of, you got me angry. I totally gave up on the write-ups but kept playing NPCs in response. Most of the systems I present are just me, Most of the systems I present are me just trying to write a systematic way to do the shit I just sort of do at my table without any mechanics. And I'm hoping you'll use them for a bit, and once you realize how this shit should work, you'll give up on the mechanics and just make the right things happen at your table. When you do that, you're running the angry way. So do the rules matter or don't they? It depends. What's it depend on? It depends. There's just no easy way to answer this shit. The rules matter when they do, and they don't when they don't, and you'll know the difference when you know the difference. But I'll tell you this, the rules do matter until you realize they don't. That is, following the rules, the ones in the book and the ones sexy gaming geniuses like me write, following the rules is a good way to start, because that's how you learn how a game should work. How it should feel, how it should play. So you have to start by following the rules. Eventually, though, you learn that the rules aren't set in stone and that your judgment counts for a lot. That's when you start making rulings and writing your own rules, house rules, hacks, all that shit. You have to do that too. That's how you learn how to tinker with the game and improve the experience, and how you learn to trust your judgment, and also how you learn to take risks. And then there comes a day when you realize that you're always there. You're always at your table, and you've always got your brain. The same judgment that helped you tinker and hack, the same judgment you learned to trust, it's always with you. So you don't really need the rules. The rules are a middleman. You know what makes for a good gameplay experience. You know it's about consistency and fairness and agency and engagement and verisimilitude. You know it's about assessing player actions and making them live with the consequences. And that's when you realize only a very small number of the rules actually effing matter. In the meanwhile, you've earned your players' trust. So when you do dump the rules and make a bunch of shit up behind the screen and you cover it with smoke and mirrors and clever patter to make it look like you're using the rules, you can also tell the players that that's exactly what you're doing. And they'll still come back next week. The ones you actually want at your table will anyway. And that's it. That's the proofread aloud and the big dirty dark secret. So I hope I'll still have some readers left after this goes live. And that's the end. Click.